The chain that did all the work hung slack around the cog's axle. Troy was surprised to see it there. Would have thought the thing ran on belts. This seemed too fragile. Not a good choice for the length of time it would be expected to serve. It was strange, in fact, to think that this machine was already 50 years old, and that it needed to last centuries more. He wiped his forehead. Sweat was still beading up from the handful of miles he'd gotten in before the machine broke. Fishing around in the toolbox Jones had loaned him, he found the flathead screwdriver and began levering the chain back onto the cog. Chains on cogs. Chains on cogs. He laughed to himself. Wasn't that the way?
Excuse me, sir.
Troy turned to find Jones, his chief mechanic for another week, standing in the gym's doorway.
Almost done, Troy said. You need your tools back? No, sir. Dr. Hansen is looking for you.
He raised his hand, had one of those clunky radios in it. Troy grabbed an old rag out of the toolbox and wiped the grease from his fingers. It felt good to be working with his hands, getting dirty. It was a welcome distraction, something to do besides checking the blisters in his mouth with a mirror, or hanging out in his office or apartment, waiting to cry again for no reason. He left the bike and took the radio from Jones. Troy felt a wave of envy for the older man. He would love to wake up in the morning, put on those denim overalls with the patches on the knees, grab his trusty toolbox, and work down a list of repairs. Anything, other than sitting around while he waited for something much bigger to break. Squeezing the button on the side of the radio, he held it up to his mouth. "This is Troy," he said. The name sounded strange. In recent weeks, he hadn't liked saying his own name, didn't like hearing it. He wondered what Dr. Hansen and the shrinks would say about that. The radio crackled.
"Sir, I hate to disturb you." "No, that's fine. What is it?"
Troy walked back to the exercise bike and grabbed his towel from the handlebars. He wiped his forehead and saw Jones hungrily eyeing the disassembled bike and scattering of tools. When he lifted his brows questioningly, Troy waved his consent.
"We've got a gentleman in our office who's not responding to treatment," Dr. Hansen said. "It looks like another deep freeze. You'll need to sign the waiver."
Jones glanced up from the bike and frowned. Troy rubbed the back of his neck with the towel. He remembered Merriman saying to be careful handing these out. There were plenty of good men who would just as soon sleep through all this mess than serve out their shifts.
"You're sure?" he asked. "We've tried everything. He's been restrained. Security is taking him down the express right now. Can you meet us down here? You'll have to sign off before he can be put away."
"Sure, sure." Troy rubbed his face with his towel. He could smell the detergent and the clean cloth cut through the odor of sweat in the room and the tinge of grease from the open bike. Jones grabbed one of the pedals with his thick hands and gave it a turn. The chain was back on the cog, the machine operational again.
"I'll be right down,"
Troy said, before releasing the button and handing the radio back to the mechanic. Some things were a pleasure to fix, others weren't. The express had already passed when Troy reached the lifts. He could see the floor display racing down. He pressed the call button for the other elevator and tried to imagine the sad scene playing out below. Whoever it was had his sympathies. He shook violently, blamed it on the cool air in the hallway and his damp skin. A ping-pong ball clocked back and forth in the rec room around the corner, sneakers squeaking as players chased the next shot. From the same room, a television was playing a movie, the sound of a woman's voice. Looking down, Troy was self-conscious about his shorts and t-shirt. The only authority he really felt was lent by his coveralls, but there was no time to ride up and change. The lift beeped and opened, and the conversation inside fell quiet. Troy nodded a greeting, and two men in yellow said hello. The three of them rode in silence for a few levels until the men got off on 44, a general living level. Before the doors could close, Troy saw a bright ball skitter across the hallway, two men racing after it. There were shouts and laughter followed by guilty silence when they noticed Troy. The metal doors squeezed shut on the brief glimpse of lower and more normal lives. With a shudder, the lift sank deeper into the earth. Troy could feel the dirt and concrete squeezing in from all sides, piling up above. Sweat from nerves mixed with that from his exercise. He was coming out of the other side of the medication, he thought. Every morning he could feel some semblance of his old self returning, and it lasted longer and longer into the day. The 50s went by. The lifts never stopped on the 50s. Emergency supplies he hoped would never be needed filled the corridors beyond. He remembered parts of the orientation, back when everyone had been awake. He remembered the code names they came up with for everything, the way new labels obscured the past. There was something here nagging him, but he couldn't place it. Next were the mechanical spaces and the general storerooms, followed by the two levels that housed the reactor. Finally, the most important storage of all. The legacy. The men and women asleep in their shiny coffins. The survivors from the before. There was a jolt as the lift slowed and the doors chimed open. Troy immediately heard a commotion in the doctor's office, Henson barking commands to his assistant. He hurried down the hallway in his gym attire, sweat cooling on his skin. When he entered the ready room, he saw an elderly man being restrained on a gurney by two men from security. It was Hal. Troy recognized him from the cafeteria, remembered speaking with him the first day of his shift and several times since. The doctor and his assistant fumbled through cabinets and drawers, gathering supplies.
"My name is Carlton,"
Hal roared, his thin arms flailing while unbuckled restraints dangled from the table and swayed from the commotion. Troy assumed they would have had him under control to get him down the lift, wondered if he had broken free when he had come to. Henson and his assistant found what they needed and gathered by the gurney. Hal's eyes widened at the sight of the needle. The fluid inside was a blue, the color of open sky. Dr. Henson looked up and saw Troy standing there in his exercise clothes, paralyzed and watching the scene. Hal screamed once more that his name was Carlton and continued to kick at the air, his heavy boots slamming against the table. The two security men jerked with the effort as they held him down.
"A hand," Henson grunted, teeth clenched as he began to wrestle with one of Hal's arms.
Troy hurried to the gurney and grabbed one of Hal's legs. He stood shoulder to shoulder with the security officers and wrestled with a boot while trying not to get kicked. Hal's legs felt like a bird's inside the baggy overalls, but they kicked like a mule's. One of the officers managed to work a strap across his thighs. Troy leaned his weight on Hal's shin while a second strap was pulled tight.
"What's wrong with him?"
he asked. His concerns about himself vanished in the presence of true madness. Or was this where he was heading?
"Meds aren't taking," Henson said.
"Or he's not taking them," Troy thought. The medical assistant used his teeth to pull the cap off the sky-colored syringe. Hal's wrist was pinned. The needle disappeared into his trembling arm, the plunger moving the bright blue liquid into his pale and blotchy flesh. Troy cringed at the sight of the needle being stabbed into Hal's jerking arm, but the power in the old man's legs faded immediately. Everyone seemed to take deep breaths as he wilted into unconsciousness, his head drifting to the side, one last incomprehensible scream fading into a moan, and then a deep and breathy exhalation.
"What the hell?"
Troy wiped his forehead with the back of his arm. He was dripping with sweat, partly from the exertion but mostly from the scene before him, from feeling a man go under like that, sensing the life and will drain from his kicking boots as he was forced to sleep. His own body shook with a sudden and violent tremor, gone before he knew it was coming. The doctor glanced up and frowned.
"I apologize for that," Henson said.
He glared at the officers, directing his blame.
"We had him, no problem," one of them said, shrugging.
Henson turned to Troy. His jowls sagged with disappointment.
"I hate to ask you to sign off on this."
Troy wiped his face with the front of his shirt and nodded. The losses had been accounted for. Individual losses, as well as silos. Spares stocked accordingly. But they all stung.
"Of course," he said.
This was his job. Right? Sign this. Say these words. Follow the script. It was a joke. They were all reading lines from a play none of them could remember. But he was beginning to. He could feel it.
Henson shuffled through a drawer of forms while his assistant unbuckled Hal's overalls. The men from security asked if they were needed, checked the restraints a final time, and were waved away. One of them laughed out loud over something the other said as the sound of their boots faded toward the lift. Troy, meanwhile, lost himself in Hal's slack face, the slight rise and fall of his old and narrow chest. Here was the reward for remembering, he thought. This man had woken up from the routine of the asylum. He hadn't gone crazy. He'd had a sudden bout of clarity. He'd cracked open his eyes and seen through the mist.
A clipboard was procured from a peg on the wall, the right form shoved into its metal jaws. Troy was handed a pen. He scratched his name, passed the clipboard back, and watched the two doctors work. He wondered if they felt any of what he felt.
What if they were all playing the same part? What if each and every one of them was concealing the same doubts, none of them talking because they all felt so completely alone?
"Could you get that one for me?"
The medical assistant was down on his knees, twisting a knob on the base of the table. Troy saw that it was on wheels. The assistant nodded at Troy's feet.
"Of course."
Troy crouched down to free the wheel. He was a part in this. It was his signature on the form. It was him twisting the knob that would free the table and allow it to roll down the hall.
With Hal under, the restraints were loosened, his overalls peeled off with care. Troy volunteered with the boots, unknotting the laces and setting them aside. There was no need for a paper gown. His modesty was no longer a concern. An IV needle was inserted and taped down. Troy knew it would plug into the cryopod. He knew what it felt like to have ice crawl through his veins. They pushed the gurney down the hall and to the reinforced steel doors of the deep freeze. Troy studied the doors. They seemed familiar. He seemed to remember specking something similar for a project once, but that was for a room full of machines. No, computers. The keypad on the wall chirped as the doctor entered his code. There was the heavy thunk of rods withdrawing into the thick jam.
"The empties are at the end," Henson said, nodding into the distance.
Rows and rows of gleaming and sealed beds filled the freezing chamber. His eyes fell to the readout screens on the bases of each pod. There were green lights, solid with life. No space needed for a pulse or heartbeat. First names only. No way to connect these strangers to their past lives. Cassie, Catherine, Gabriella, Gretchen. Made up names. Gwyn, Hallie,
Heather, everyone in order. No shifts for them. Nothing for the men to fight over. It would all be done in an instant. Step inside the lifeboat, dream a moment, step out onto dry land. Another Heather. Duplicates without last names. Troy wondered how that would work. He steered blindly between the rows, the doctor and his assistant chatting about the procedure, when a name caught his peripheral vision, and a fierce tremor vibrated through his limbs. Helen. And another. Helen. Troy lost his grip on the gurney and nearly fell. The wheels squealed to a stop.
Sir?
Two Helens. But before him, on a crisp display showing the frozen temps of a deep, deep slumber,